certainly want to hear her voice instead of mine. But, you know, welcome everybody. It is so good to see everybody here. And all I can think of is what the Father must think when all of his children are singing together with one voice. That was just amazing. So we are so glad to have everyone here, to get to meet other members of the family. It's exciting, and we hope that this will just be the first of many, not a one-time event, but we would truly love to get to know and to break bread with and to truly hear the testimonies that each one has about how they've been called and what life they are living and how they're representing a different kingdom. And that's exciting for us. So we do thank you on behalf of all of those here in our little fellowship. We thank you for coming and taking the time to share with us. And please stay. We've got tons of food out there. There's nothing like breaking bread together. So we do appreciate all of you for coming. My wife is a licensed professional counselor, and she works a couple of different jobs. One is as a psychotherapist in a stress unit. So the suicidal, the homicidal, the psychotic come to where she works. She also works in a Christian-based counseling organization where she offers marriage and family counseling, and she's also certified in addictions and all sorts of things that she helps counsel people on as they're struggling. And one of the challenges that she faces in her job and in her responsibility is that she is getting people coming to her all the time and saying, I just want to be happy. If I could only take this drug or drink this beverage or smoke this plant, or do this sexual activity, or whatever, just have this job or have this money, I would then be happy. And that's how so much of this world is focused on what does it take to be happy. And I would propose to you today that the world, like everything else that they have, has got something all messed up. But because so many of us live in the world and we see what's broadcast on the TV, on the internet, through the airwaves, through the literature, anything you want, that so often we get sucked into the thinking that if only this trial would be gone, if only this, if only that, and then I would be happy. And I'd like to speak today to those who are married in particular, but this applies to all of us. It's a sort of a universal family responsibility, but are you aware, now it's a premise that I'd like to speak on today, that the Father is more concerned with our holiness than our happiness? I think you're familiar, the word to be holy means to be distinct, to be set apart, to be separate. He says, how many places be you holy as I am holy? You know, we can start in Exodus 19:6, and I'm gonna assume that many of you know your scripture, so I'm gonna ask Gary, you don't have to try and keep up with me. I'm gonna be reading some verses from the New Revised Standard Version. That's just what I happen to like. But in Exodus 19:6, there on Mount Sinai, he says, I'm going to make to you a holy nation. You will be a kingdom of priests. The whole nation was going to be that way. Leviticus 11, 30, 44 and 45, he says, be you holy as I am holy. Leviticus 19, verse 2, 20, verse 7, and 26, verse 26, he says, be you holy as I am holy. Numbers 15, 20, be you holy as I am holy. Deuteronomy 7, 6, he says, I'm setting you apart as a nation, that I will bless you, I will raise you up, that you would be holy as I am holy. We can go on to Deuteronomy 14:2, chapter 26:19. In the book of Ephesians, we are to be a holy people. Ephesians 5:27, again, speaking of the incredible mystery of the Messiah and the church, he says that he was washing the church to make her spotless, a holy, pure bride. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 15 and 16, that we are to live holy lives. And the challenge we've got is, have we been sucked into the concept that life is supposed to be happy? Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness? Isn't that what it's all about? But our Father says, no. Your life, your purpose, your role, you should be in the pursuit of holiness. Because I think we will find, and if you go look up all the verses that relate to blessed and happy is the man, that happiness comes as a byproduct of being holy. And so when you're pursuing the wrong thing, so often you get into trouble because he says, that's not what I intended it to be. That the more you pursue me, the more you pursue my way, the more you pursue my laws. If you love me, if you love me, it's not if you're going to be dutiful to me, it's if you love me. Because salvation is a gift. Remember, ancient Israel, he saved them first and then he told them to obey at Mount Sinai. They had already been saved. So it isn't about I can do something other than if I love him, I will obey him, and if I obey him, a byproduct of my obedience will be happiness. But so many people get caught up in the pursuit of happiness rather than holiness. There's a book by Gary Thomas entitled Sacred Marriage, and I would really encourage any of you who are married or thinking about marriage. It's a fabulous book because he addresses a lot of this topic. That what if the Father designed marriage or life to be about our holiness and not necessarily our happiness? Because if you look at Scripture, I believe that spiritual growth is the main theme. And for you who are married, marriage is the context that you try and become spiritually developed. For you who are married, do you use marriage to grow in service, obedience, character, pursuit, and the love of the Father? Is that the context for which you grow? Because unfortunately, within the family and within my wife's practice, we talk to, we see, she deals with an incredible number of unhappy marriages because their pursuit, their desire, their focus is on, I just want to be happy. And it's a challenge. You know, if I really want to see the Father transform me from inside out, I would need to concentrate on changing myself rather than changing my spouse. In fact, think of this, the more difficult your spouse is to live with, the greater opportunity you have for holiness. So I ask some general things to those who aren't married, and this applies also to those who are. Where does your pursuit of holiness take you? For those who are in school, are you more concerned with being happy and accepted, that you'll go to a party, that you know things will happen at that party, that you say, well, I'll not participate, but at least I'll be there and I'll fit in because, you know, I need to be happy. I have to be accepted. I want my friends. And, yeah, I know that there might be some underage drinking or just too much drinking or, you know, when it comes to sports, yeah, I know about the Sabbath, but You know, I just think that at this stage in my life, it's really more important for me to be happy that I'm accepted than it is for me to be holy. Or Aaron, when he watches his TV late at night, what is he watching? Is it direct him to holiness? You thought Sharon was going to get after you. Wait till we've had this long ongoing thing with Aaron that you don't need a TV in your bedroom. Come on. But he said, no, and it's a very fun, but I think I have the last word here. But what do we watch, brethren? What do we watch? Does it help us in our pursuit of holiness? What videos do we watch? You gamers out there, what games are you playing? Because I will show you many, many, many verses, and I just quoted a bunch of them, where the Father says through his word, I'm more concerned that you are set apart, that you are different, that you are distinct, that it is very easy to tell who you are from the rest of the world, because that's how I am. I am over here. I want you to be just like me. What does it say in Genesis 1, 26, 27? Let us make man in our image, that in our likeness, in our image, right? We are to be image bearers of the Most High. And yet, so many of us fall into the trap, as it were, of, well, I just want to fit in, and then once they get to know me, they'll know that I'm different. And once they accept me, they'll know I'm different. And once they see how I behave at their parties, and when I go to the movies with them, when I go to the sporting, and I just want to fit in because then I can be a light to them. And you know, there might be a unique circumstance where you can do that. But do we keep in mind this concept that if we are to be like him, when does it start? When do we begin to start to be holy? There's this verse that I think most of us know, and it says, be ready always to give a reason of the answer of the hope that lies within you with meekness and fear. Think of that? You know what I think is the sad thing? Is that most people, when they, and I'm making a broad brush, so if it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply to you. But I've heard this so many times. People answer that with, I don't work on Saturdays. I keep the Sabbath. I don't eat certain foods. I don't, and they start telling people what they don't do. Is that the hope that you have, what you don't do? But I mean, honestly, think it through. How often have we, somebody says, well, what do you believe? Well, often you start out with, I believe I'm a child of the Most High. I represent a different kingdom. I am called to be different. I am called to be holy. No, we say, well, I don't do this, I don't do that. I'm a Seventh-day Observer. We tell people what we do, not what is our hope. And I would encourage you, as you think this through, where does our pursuit of holiness enter in? You know, we are told in the first great commandment to love the Father with all our heart, mind, soul, strength, spirit. I mean, depending where you read, three things or four things. And then we are to love our neighbors as ourselves. The two great commandments on which hang all the law and all the prophets. Have you ever met somebody who loves the Father, the Son, too much? We usually have a problem that we don't love him enough. We love him too little. What happens when it comes to marriage? Now, I ask, do you love that person that you committed to live your whole life with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength? You're supposed to love the Father, then you love your neighbor as yourself. We're told to love our enemies. And yet I've heard people say, I just don't love my spouse anymore. You know what they're really saying? I'm really not a believer. When you can say, I don't love my spouse anymore, I don't know how that works. It says, the sign that you are my disciples by the love you have for one another. And if you're supposed to love your enemies, you're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself. There's an awful lot of people that I meet, including me, who love themselves a great deal. So I ask you, as you start thinking about being different, about being distinct, being set apart, where's your heart? Can you really love too much, or is our problem we love the Father too little and we love ourselves too much? I just throw this in, and I've been kicking around, and someday we're going to, I hope as a fellowship here, discuss it. But I've talked to some leaders in other churches, and they are not Sabbath keepers. But they say, you know, when it says love our neighbors as ourselves, they've decided as a fellowship that for every dollar that comes into their congregation, they're giving 50% of it away. They're going to love somebody as much as they love themselves. They've canceled building programs. They've canceled certain things because their desire is to go give as much as they have. I think, what an interesting thing. You know, the Father says when it comes to tithing, just give me a tenth. Look at how much I'm giving you. And yet he says, love your neighbor as yourself. So yeah, I just ask, as you start thinking of this concept of holiness, to be set apart, to be distinct, to be separate like he is, what does that really mean in our life? What do we read? What do we watch? How do we spend our time? But ultimately, when it comes to the two great commandments that are about love, how do we do? Because our love for the Father is attached to our love for other people. How can we say, I believe it's in 1 John, that we love the Father, but we hate our brother? You're a liar. You can't have it your way. So I ask, as we go through this, what happens when you don't feel love to someone? It's not their fault, it's your fault. If we are told to love our enemies, doesn't that really make it really hard not to love our spouse or our friend or our neighbor? I believe if you are in pursuit of holiness and not happiness, that our understanding of love will change, that our focus on love will change. It might affect our giving. It might affect what we do with our time. It might affect how we spend our money. It might affect what we read and where we do things, what we drink, what we eat. So I ask you. Because, you know, our problem is our society is an expert in self-care. There are so many books, so many seminars about taking care of old number one. Be assertive, take care, stand your ground, do these things, because you got to take care of you. The focus in our world is not on caring for others, it's on caring for ourselves. You ever heard of the word sacrifice? You know what? That's almost a dirty, negative word in today's world, isn't it? A sacrifice? You want me to give up something? It has too many connotations. Because you know what? When people start thinking of sacrifice, I've heard some people say, well, I don't want to become codependent on somebody. What they're really saying is, I'd rather be selfish than try and get invested in somebody else and love them like myself. Sacrifice. Yeah, here it is, 1 John 4:20-21. If anyone says, I love God, yet hates his brother, he is a liar. So where does this concept of love come in when it means to be holy as I am holy? He loved us first while we were yet sinners. He set the perfect example of unconditional love. So I ask you, as you look at the concept of love, and I'm just going to blow through a bunch of topics here, but it's this: how does holiness fit into that? Because if our context, if our life is about a spiritual growth and the context is whether we're in a marriage or not in a marriage, how do you apply these principles of being holy to that context? I've spoken on this to others before, but Dr. John Gottman did a study of, I think, 2,000 married couples for over 20 years, looking for what makes a successful marriage, what leads to failure. And the number one problem he found in marriages that fail was contempt. It was the most corrosive force in a marriage, contempt. Usually, not always, it was the wife's contempt for a husband. How often have you focused on somebody else's failures and problems? Remember, we're told in Matthew that take the plank, the beam out of your own eye before you focus on the speck in somebody else's eye? Except in marriage. See that little asterisk? Except in marriage. Because if I just fix this person, then my life will be okay, because that'll make me happy. If I just fix them, look at all the problems they have, and if they were just different, I would be happy. So therefore, we focus on picking. Because we work and live and practice in a society that is not about respecting others, it's about gaining respect for yourself. And yet we are told many times in Scripture, and we rarely consider our obligation to respect others. You know, in Leviticus 19:3, it says that we are to respect our parents. You can find that in the Ten Commandments as well. Honor, respect your parents. In Leviticus 19:32, it says to rise up before the hoary head, to respect the elderly. Go to Malachi 1:6, where even the father says, I want your respect. In Ephesians 5, verse 33, 1 Peter 1:7, it says to respect your spouse, especially women. It is a command. Women are to respect their husbands. And husbands are to love their wives. Unconditional love is often talked about. Unconditional love is written about. Unconditional love is on every card you buy in a store. But how much have you heard or read or practiced unconditional respect? Ladies, that applies to you. There's a fantastic book by Emerson Eggerich called Love and Respect. It is a whole book on that one verse in Ephesians, that women must respect their husband and men must love their wives. Fabulous, fabulous book for anyone. But how often do we practice respect? 1 Peter 2:17 then says, we must respect everybody. There's nobody left out. The human person, do we give dignity to every other human being? That they were intended to be an image bearer, whether they are called at this time or not, of the Most High. Our Messiah died for them just as much as he died for me. Do we disdain people who are not in our belief or our fellowship? Or disdain people who aren't in a certain socioeconomic status or a certain educational level or a certain job position? Do we disdain them because they're not like me? Do we have respect for a fellow human being? I ask this question to the married couples because this is the only case in which I think it should be done. But when you wake up next to your spouse, do they feel like they're waking up next to the Messiah? Do you live a life? Do you practice a life? Do you grow? Do you know? Do you teach? Do you live a life that reflects him? Do they say, you know, this is amazing. You're, look at who you're becoming. What kind of an image bearer are we in the lives we live? Because for those who are married, when you said, I do, you committed for life. And what the Father has given you is a full-length mirror that every day they get to reflect back to you who you really are. What kind of an image do you see? Where are you on the path? How many of you who, whether it's been 3 years or 30 years or 40 years or 10 years, wherever you are in your duration, where are you in looking at that mirror and seeing the reflection? Because for those, and I've talked to those who do metallurgy, that especially a silversmith, they know when silver is purified and all the slag and the scum and all the stuff, and they have to heat it up really hot and scrape off the dross and all that. They know it's pure when they can see their reflection in it. What's a mirror? Silver-coated, purified, and we're supposed to see the reflection in the Most High. Is your focus that I will respect others because the Father says that's my responsibility? And by doing so, I will become different. It won't be about number one. It will be about giving dignity to those who also are intended, whether they are or not, to become image bearers of the Most High. For those, again, who are married, marriage is a terrific way in which we can develop good prayer. Because there are times when things don't go right. You know, prayer is a fundamental, sort of kind of essential responsibility of a believer. I don't know how you can get away with saying, no, you don't really need to pray, or when I'm laying in bed, I pray, or when I'm eating my breakfast, I pray, or when I'm in the bathroom, I pray. I'm not really sure that the Father appreciates sometimes our attitude. Not that you can't. You can pray at all times and in all circumstances, but if that's what you're characterized by, go look at those the Scripture gives as examples. 3 times a day, usually on their knees in a quiet place or in a prayer closet, calling out, beseeching the Father, and it's usually audibly, not just in your head. You know, in 1 Peter 3:7, it tells the men, so that your prayers are not hindered. Think about that. How do you treat your wife? How do you treat your wife? And it says that if you treat her poorly, your prayers will be hindered, if you go and reverse that. Are we concerned about our behavior with our spouse? I think that can go back to how do we treat and deal with other people so that your prayers would not be hindered. Do married couples really understand that in marriage, godliness is selflessness? You're no longer free to pursue what you want, the way you want, at any time you want, without regard for someone else, if you want to represent the Most High. That's not what marriage was about, to have a servant so you could do whatever you wanted, and she would have to submit. Now, I would dare say, ladies, if you are in that position of having that kind of a marriage, then think of the holiness that you will be able to gain by being humble and prayerful and obedient, and what reward you will get. Because this isn't about this life. It isn't about this life. These are temporary vessels. This is just an earthly tent that we've been given to represent and to be like Him, to become like Him, to represent Him but it's temporary. We have a greater calling. We have a kingdom to represent. For you who are single, in one respect, you can do what you want. You're not held accountable to anybody except to the Father. But that gives you, in some respects, freedom on a greater level to choose. How am I going to represent Him? How am I going to use my time? How am I going to serve? And if you're serving for what you're going to get out of it, you've missed the point. It's like, I don't eat pork, therefore, what? What are you going to get out of that? Health benefit? Because He certainly says you're not saving yourself. There are weightier matters of the law, remember? So as we think about holiness versus happiness, how do we treat each other? Because it can and it will, and Scripture says it, men, will hinder your prayers. You can be the greatest prayer warrior on the face of the earth, I believe, and if you totally go contrary to what it says in Scripture about how you deal with your wife, kind of like, I'm not really sure I hear you down there. Your words are saying one thing, but your actions are saying the other. I want to do something. This came to mind. I want all of you, make a circle, and you that have seen this before, like this, please do this. And I want you, when I do, put it on your cheek, okay? All right, let's do it. Put it on your cheek. Good, because when we do this without being very specific to cheek, to cheek, to cheek, 90-some percent of the people will follow what I do and not what I say. And the whole point is people are going to do what you, see what you do and not what you say. So you can say I'm close to the Father and I pray all the time and I treat my wife like dirt, I treat my kids like servants, I treat my neighbor as somebody I don't love, and yet you can say all you want what a great devoted believer you are, and I will challenge you. Where's your holiness? How do you treat other people? For all of you who've been married for a while, I guess I'll say more than 2 years. Because there's a reality that 2 years, the routine, the human condition really starts to set into a marriage. And people starting to say, who did I marry, really? You know, that's really starting to irritate me. And if you would just quit doing that, I would be much happier. And you will find, because we find, and my wife, that's part of her job, but as we talk to people throughout the body, that something happens around 2 years, and it's not the same for everybody, but you start getting a little bit on your nerves. They're bugging me. And you start nitpicking and picking and picking and picking and picking. And you're looking at the speck in their life. And we're forgetting what our responsibility is. But how much do you practice perseverance? We live in a society that wants instant gratification. We want it now. We don't want to have to work for it. Every movie you watch, hour and a half or 2 hours, they resolve it to the happiness of all. Every half-hour TV show, it only takes you 22 minutes to get something resolved. Every one-hour show, in 42 minutes, they came, they saw, they conquered, they've resolved it. Now we can go happily on in 42 minutes to the next episode. Have it now, the credit cards say. You want that? Have it now. We live in a world that wants instant gratification, and they're out there trying to sell it to us. I'm sorry, because we're living in the world, hopefully we're not of it, that those things sometimes, we want our trials to be over in 22 minutes or 43 minutes or at most an hour and a half. I prayed about it, and nothing happened. You know, in Colossians it says that in all things, under all circumstances, give thanks. Because maybe, just maybe, the Father says, I'm more concerned about purifying you and refining you and making you holy than I am about making you happy. The woman who had an issue of blood for 12 years, and she went to all the rabbis and everybody, and the Messiah cast out a spirit of infirmity out of her. It was a spiritual issue for a specific purpose. Or the man who was born blind from birth, and he was in his 30s, maybe 40s, before the Messiah healed him, and they said, well, who sinned, his father or him? His parents or him? The Messiah said, no, this was that God would be glorified. And so often we look at a problem that we're dealing with, a struggle that we're going through, a trial that we're in the midst of. It might be going on for days. How about weeks or months or sometimes years? And we start to say, where is he when you need him? I can't rely on him. He's not hearing my prayer. Remember where, right before they went into the garden, the Messiah said to Peter, Satan has asked to sift you like wheat. I pray that you will be up to the task. I pray that you will come back. How would you like to be put in that, or Job? Enemy, come on over. Let's look at my servant. And you can do anything you want. And eventually you know the story. But do we believe that as an image bearer, and our call to be holy as he is holy might mean that we're going to have to suffer and endure trials and tribulations? Wait, doesn't he tell us that? As I have suffered, you will suffer, but be of good cheer, I have overcome the world. And yet, how many of us, and I'm guilty, in the midst of discouragement, in the midst of a trial, in the midst of suffering, start saying, yeah, right, where is he? What about me? Or do we, as the testimony was, to say, I can be thankful for what I have, what I know and what the future is and what the hope is. And you know what? That's when somebody should ask you, what is the reason of the hope that lies within you? Because I'm an image bearer of kingdom that is coming. And I'm so convinced that it's coming that I will thank him in the midst of a trial and tribulation. And the day is coming. I'm a firm believer we are at the end of days. And I'm not setting dates. But this world we live in, I don't know how it can keep going. Because you know what Scripture says? That unless those days would be shortened, no flesh would be saved alive. The enemy hates mankind. We all think, no, he hates believers. No, he hates mankind because each one of us is a potential son of the Most High or daughter of the Most High. We are a threat. He said, this was my earth. I was ruler of it. Adam and Eve came along, I got rid of them, and then this Yeshua came along, and we're at war, and we're still at war, and we're the representative. Mankind is a representative. And so often, I think we feel, I'm different. I really don't have to learn the lesson. I really don't have to struggle. I really don't have to put my trust in him, even when it hurts. Even when I don't have money and I don't have a job or I have a physical ailment or whatever our struggle is, because we are all unique. There is no other person on earth like you or me. I have 3 children. I do not love them equally. I love them uniquely. They are unique. They are special. They are precious in their own right, and I love them for who they are. And that's what the Father says. I loved you first. There is no one on earth like you. And only you can praise me, and only you can worship me in a certain way, and only you and I can have a certain type of relationship. There is no way that I can have the same exact relationship with each of my children because of how unique they are, special, and we have very special relationships. Do we know that's what it is like for each one of us? But he says, are you going to persevere? He who endures to the end, the same shall be saved. But if we understand that we are to be different, if we are to be set apart, if we are set apart for a specific godly purpose to represent him, to be an image bearer, to live like him, to walk like him, to talk like him, to love like him, what will that do in our fellowships? What will that do in our families? What will that do in our jobs, in our communities, if they said, there's something about that person, I got to go talk to him and find out. And some of the answers we give people, it's like, is that hope? Or is that what you don't do? Do we really understand ourselves? What is our hope? And what is our calling? And what is our purpose? Do we persevere? Because when we persevere and when we embrace difficulty, we build character. We build character. Isn't that something that is intended for us to be, to build character? Have you ever, well, if you've taken geology, the issues of tectonic plates, geographers, geologists, there's tectonic plates, and some of the mountain ranges are formed because these incredible masses are pushing together, and they can measure, Mount Everest rises, I forget how much fraction of an inch, because the Himalayas are rising, the Pacific coast, the Pacific plate, all these different tectonic plates, that's where earthquakes come from. But mountains are a thing of beauty and grandeur and majesty, and they're by two tremendous forces coming together and grinding away, and something that is beautiful is formed. Do we embrace character development? Because, you know, many people leave marriages, they leave relationships because it takes work. And it's hard. And sometimes the irresistible force meets the immovable object, and it's like, what happens now? Or do we accept the fact that this life is difficult and we are going to use the difficulty to help build character? Because our focus is that we're more concerned with holiness than happiness. Have you ever heard of somebody leaving a marriage because it was too easy? You know, I had it too good. She was too loving. She gave too much. It was too easy. I needed a challenge, so I thought I'd go find a more difficult marriage. I don't know that I've ever heard that as an example why somebody wanted out of a marriage or a relationship, because it was just too easy. Do we embrace difficulty because it builds character? And if your marriage is difficult, then I would ask you to get down on your knees and thank the Father that he's given you an opportunity to grow spiritually. You know, it says to the women that without a word that you could win over the heart of an unbelieving mate. Without a word, just by your actions, just by your behavior, and do we really believe that? That if we could do that for an unbeliever, what would happen if we became spiritually mature enough to do that for a believing mate? Do you thank Him for the opportunity for unparalleled, in one respect, spiritual growth? Because our hope, our vision, our focus is on what is coming and not what we're living now. Or are we wanting instant gratification? I'm so thankful my wife has, for all the 30-plus years of our marriage, and we've tried to teach it to our children, that delayed gratification is okay. It's okay to work hard for something and wait and be patient, because it is so much worth the wait when you have saved the money to buy something without having to borrow, when you sacrifice because it's something that was really important, then when you got it, you appreciated it even more. And so often we want instant character. We don't want trials. We don't want tribulation. And I certainly don't want to have to persevere for more than a day or two, let alone weeks or months or years, because I want it now. It's all about me. Remember, taking care of number one. If you were to look at history, there is no other time in the history of mankind where we've had it so easy. Especially in this nation. The rest of the world, 80% of the world's living on $2 a day. Their sole focus every day getting up is, am I going to eat today? Am I going to eat today? And I challenge any one of you, and as I've been telling my wife, I'm preparing for the coming famine. I've not missed too many meals. Even the poorest people. I've talked to people, believers who come from other countries, and they say, we hear people complaining about how poor they are. You have no idea what it means to be poor. We are so spoiled in this country. We are so spoiled as believers. Sometimes I wonder if the Father just doesn't shake his head and he said, we did call rocks. They don't understand how we have blessed them. All I'm getting is complaints because it's tough and they have a trial and they don't want to persevere. They don't want to build character. They just want, in 22 minutes, to be given what they want. You know, in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17, it says, don't be nearsighted. These are momentary and temporary afflictions. It's part of the process. It's part of the dues that we pay to be called. It says, crucify your selfishness. Because if we confront ourselves, if we confess our sins, if we ask for forgiveness, you know, it's hard work. The payoff with holiness is that when we do all those things, we find an inner peace and inner joy and happiness is this amazing byproduct. There is a peace which surpasses understanding. And I tell you, from some of the trials I've had in my life, when I'm crying out the most and then change my attitude to being thankful that I get to learn a lesson from this trial, there's a peace that comes upon me. It doesn't take the trial away. But there's this peace that I'll get through this. And I will be better off on the other end. And what's always amazing, it's not until sometime later when I look back in hindsight and I say, he was there with me the whole time. And he worked things out. He promises, I will make all things work together for good to those who are the called according to his purpose. Doesn't mean that everything that happens to you is good. Bad things, evil things happen to people. That's the world we live in. Causality. Other people are free to do bad things, and we're free to be the recipients of them. But the Father says, I will make good come out of that. Do we believe that? Because he's perfecting us. He's more concerned with our holiness than our happiness. Do you view your struggles in light of what they provide for us spiritually rather than in light of what they take from us emotionally or physically? It's okay to cry out. But do we understand that it's about suffering? I ask in your prayers, Do you cry out to the Father that he would come and relieve this world of the suffering, the evil, the horror that's going on around us? Or is our prayers, like some have been in the past, because they've spoken them verbally, give this world what it deserves, smite them, crush them, thank you that I'm not like them? What did the Messiah do? He wept for Jerusalem. Oh, that like a mother hen I could gather you in and protect you. Do we cry out for this world? Do we cry out in pain for the suffering that's all around us, for the evil that is going on? Do we cry out, save this world, Father? Mankind needs you. We've already got it made. We know our future. We know our hope. I hope you know your hope. I hope you know that he says, hey, look what I have in store, but do we love our neighbor as ourselves? Or is it, come and save me? Are we Jonahs? I don't want them to be saved. They're bad people out there. I'm going to do everything I can not to pray for them. I'm going to go run and hide. How could you be a loving God if you're going to save them? Look at, I've not worked for 10 years on the Sabbath. I don't eat this and that anymore. What about me? And he says, what about them? What is our heart? Are we seeking holiness more than happiness? Can you be holy without forgiving? How often do you grant forgiveness to those who don't even ask for it? You know, too many people, I believe, misunderstand forgiveness. They think that if you grant forgiveness, that means there's reconciliation and restoration. I don't want to be their friend. You can't believe the horrors that I've experienced growing up at that person. I can't forgive them because I can't have a relationship with them. Forgiveness really says, Father, I'll allow you to deal with the matter, and I will not seek revenge. I will not seek vengeance. I turn it over to you. It doesn't mean you have to be friends with them. It doesn't mean you are reconciled with them. It doesn't mean your relationship is restored with them. It just means that you've given up the right to exact revenge. There are scientific studies. My wife's done some really cool Bible studies on the topic of forgiveness and what it does physiologically to you. Those who cannot forgive, the bitterness, the resentment, the hatred that builds up physically destroys somebody, and you are constantly suffering for somebody else's sin, where all you have to do is turn it over to the Father, and you will be relieved of that burden. Oh, he forgives us if we ask. He says, if you can't forgive others, what do you expect me to do when it comes to you? But do we understand that if we want to be holy, we have to grant forgiveness, whether it's asked for or not? Now, if somebody comes to you repentant and asks for forgiveness, and you can restore a relationship and reconcile with them, then you're far better off. Sometimes that cannot happen. And it shouldn't happen. There are some people that it's better that you stay away from, but you can forgive them. Where does forgiveness, well, wait a second. If they come to me, maybe I'll think about it. Depends on how repentant they are. Here's something to think about when you go to someone else. I think the pattern we have is when we go to the Father. I sinned and I did this specific thing against you. Will you forgive me? We have to enumerate, what did we do? Because, you know, early in our marriage, I'd do something stupid and I'd go to my wife and say, I'm sorry, will you forgive me? And you know, the reality is, when you say you're sorry, you get to determine how sorry you are. I'm sorry I got caught. I'm sorry you're mad at me. I'm sorry I have to do this. I determine how sorry I am. But when I go to her and say, I did not love you, and I spoke harshly to you, and I did not honor you as a woman should be honored, and I will do my best even though I'm human, please, will you forgive me for not loving you the way that I am told to love you? I now put it in her hands. She determines whether I'm forgiven or not. That's the trouble with forgiveness, when you place it into somebody else's hands. But that's what we do with the Father. When we go to Him and we could cry out for what we did that was so stupid and so wrong, will you forgive me? It's out of our hands. But you know, being the guy that I am, I like to keep control of things, so I'll just say, I'm sorry. She'll say, aren't you going to say something else? Will you forgive me for doing this? And she always forgives me. She always forgives me. And sometimes I get pretty sad at how many times I have to ask her for forgiveness, but she always forgives me. That makes me love her even more. Because she can love me in spite of myself. And she helps me to be better. She helps me in my spiritual walk. She is a fabulous example of what it can be like. That I'm allowed to ask for forgiveness and it's granted. So I ask, where is forgiveness in your walk of holiness? With each other. With our brother. There have been so many divisions over the past how many years because we have to do it our way. And the things that we divide over is because usually somebody is trying to force you to do it the way they do, and if they won't do it their way, you can't meet with me. What if the Father were that way? I'm sorry, you didn't get that right. You're out of here. Next. He's allowing us to grow and to develop. And will we love one another even when we don't see eye to eye on certain things? But he says, just bear with me and bear with each other. The day is coming when we'll all know. And we hope in our fellowship, we want people to worship in the way that they feel comfortable. And as long as we don't tell you and you don't tell us this is the only way you can do it, you're welcome. Because in our walk of holiness, each of us are going to answer for where we are and what we know and what we did. For what we did and what we know. Not as much as I would love to get into the kingdom on my wife's coattails, I can't rely on that because Scripture says, you're going to answer. You're going to answer. And finally, to wrap this up, in our march, our desire, our purpose for holiness, do we have a servant's heart? Do we really believe what it says, it's better to give than to receive? But I need this right now. Where is your servant's heart? Especially as the spring high days are coming upon us and we look at the Passover and the example that was set, that our Messiah humbled himself and he said, don't be like the world, but he who will be greatest will be the servant among you. Don't be like the Gentiles who lord it over one another. Do we have a servant's heart? And we live in a world that's really hard not to want to be served. It's really hard because it's all about you're number one. You need to get what you want. And take care of yourself. And exalt yourself because, you know, you're owed that. How well Do we understand a servant's heart? Look at the Messiah's example. I'll look at something here quickly. I had a verse written down, but I forget what it really says. Philippians 2, verse 5. Let this same mind be in you that was in our Messiah, who, though he was in the form of God, did not regard equality with God as something to be exploited, but he emptied himself, taking the form of a slave, a servant, being born in human likeness and being found in human form, he humbled himself and became obedient to the point of death, even death on a cross. What an example, and we claim to be image bearers, and yet do we have a servant's heart? So I ask you, brethren, as you look at your life, as you look at each day that you live, as you look at where your heart is it in the pursuit of happiness or is it in the pursuit of holiness? Because if we really are looking to the Most High to perfect us and make us image bearers of His Son, there is a glory coming that will blow our mind. But we have to start looking like Him sometime, don't we? And I would hope that you who have been around for 10 or 15 or 20 or more years, that you have not repeated 1 year of growth 15 or 20 times. See, I've had people at work that have a certain little bit of knowledge and understanding, and 15 years later, that's all they're still capable of. And we say, you've not grown from your first year. You've just repeated it 15 times. Look at your spiritual life. Are you growing and maturing and each day being transformed by the renewing of our mind so that we would know what the perfect and acceptable will of the Father is, that we start to think like Him and look like Him and live like Him because we're focused on being holy like Him. And that's the challenge that we have. So I ask all of you, as you get down on your knees, as you read the Word, as you live the life, ask yourself, am I more concerned about the holiness that He asks of me than the happiness that we all pursue? Thank you. It is the tradition of our fellowship that, for a lot of reasons, that if somebody speaks in front of the group, that the group gets to either question or challenge them so that we are held accountable for what we say. So I would ask if you have a comment, if it's relevant to the topic, I would be glad to hear it. If you feel that I'm in error somewhere, I would be glad to hear it so that all could hear it. Otherwise, we can sing. So I just, Dennis. First time.
But just for the record, I think when you're talking about suffering, you're not talking about the extreme cases, for example, where there's abuse within a marriage where someone's almost in danger of their lives. I know you're not talking about that. So I just want to state that for the record, you're talking about the normal relationship.
If they're content to dwell you, but you should never put up with abuse. Never. That is not right. That is, you do not have to. Yes, Dennis, I totally agree. There's all sorts of emotional abuse, physical abuse. Yes, there's people like my wife who can give counseling. But legally, she even has a fiduciary responsibility to get someone out of a dangerous position. You do not have to put up with abuse.
I was thinking about, along with everything that you've said, and I agree with everything, a lot of times we do think of the negative rather than the positive, a lot of things. But I was just thinking, it came to my mind when you were saying that about, you know, in the scriptures it says, you shall not do this and you shall not do that. But, he's just given us a guide of, you know, what we are to do.
Right. I think of Leviticus 26, Deuteronomy 28, blessings and cursings. I believe it's saying, look, this is the way the world works. If you do these things, bad things happen. If you do these things, good happen. And just in case you don't understand, I'm telling you which one I think you should choose. But it's the way the world works. It's not that he's punishing us. He says, this is the way the world works out there. And if you obey me, you do it because you love me. Let's sing. Thanks, everybody.